The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11.
We'll get started in state politics. On the line, we've got Andy Medic, Animal Justice Party MP for Western Victoria. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, Mitchell. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Any thoughts on that figure that's just come through, 11 new cases, double digits?
Well, when you look at that figure in isolation, yes, that would be alarming for people, and I do expect people to be concerned about that, and we should be. But as you rightly pointed out, it's not the figure itself, it's where they're coming from. If those 11 are genomically be able to be traced to that particular outbreak or a singular outbreak section, you know, group of people, then that indicates that the contact tracing is doing its job properly and won't necessarily affect whether Melbourne comes out of lockdown or eases restrictions, I think, is probably more what would be likely to happen.
What do you make of what's going on, the fact that Victoria is in its fourth lockdown? A lot of people out there would be frustrated. They're annoyed at having to do homeschooling with their kids. They're worried about the mental health aspects. Why has Victoria been so vulnerable to COVID-19, so susceptible to lockdowns compared to any other state, do you think?
Well, it's a great question, and I don't think there's one simple answer. It's certainly not contact tracing. The fact that we're able to track down all of these cases when an outbreak occurs proves that the contact tracing system that we have does work. Otherwise, we just wouldn't be doing that. We'd have people turning up to hospitals left, right and centre. But we have to... My honest thoughts are that this all stems from the fact that hotel quarantine is not a good system to begin with, no matter what state you're in. I mean, we're looking at the situation where this originally started from one person who contracted the virus in hotel quarantine in South Australia and brought it back here, and could not have known. They didn't know, tested positive. They caught the virus there and then brought it back, but they were negative at the time of you know, just before their release. So, you know, this just proves that hotel quarantine doesn't work and makes the case very strongly for a proper quarantine situation, isolated, like we have at Howard Springs in Northern Territory. And, you know, I've been making the case, and I know others have as well, for Avalon Airport, and there are very good reasons for that, in that, you know, when we have people coming in from overseas, they're on a contained property. We can take them straight from the planes to a dedicated facility, and we can monitor the situation there. And not only that, but we can also have a situation where all of the workers, because I did a lot of fly-in, fly-out work, and it's a very simple thing, all of the workers that we would need to be on that particular facility could go onto that base, they would be there, do their shift, and then isolate for 14 days before coming back out into the community, tested during that period. You can build this situation to also have a medical facility on site. So you can put all of the things, the safeguards that you need to put in place for that facility to operate properly before anyone from there actually comes back out into the community again. So the community right across Victoria and indeed across Australia, because then you can let all of these people travel again interstate, is that they have some surety that, you know, every safeguard has been taken to protect the community.
I know that your background before entering into politics was in the construction industry. Do you have a sense as to what sort of timeline we might be on if we were to hypothetically start building such a facility in a couple of weeks? When could it start accepting overseas arrivals?
Well, Mitch, the necessity is the mother of invention, and there are many... having gone, as I say, I've been on mining camps in different places around the country in that period, and there are different qualities of what you can set up. I would like to see, there are several companies in Victoria, for instance, that could start to manufacture what we're asking for, because bear in mind you need some different things. You would have individual, you know, people who don't need a large facility to stay in, accommodation. But you do have families coming who will need something larger, and they need to be of a quality that's not low standard. You know, they need to be of a quality where these people are comfortable, and they have everything that they need to live, as though they might be living in a hotel room, but certainly with a lot more room to move around within that facility as well. And these could be done if we can move very, very quickly. We need to put in things such as, you know, power, water, you know, sanitation, all these sorts of things need to be put in, and then concrete pads, all sorts of things need to be done. But you could get all of that done with the right workforce on site. You could begin that and have it up and running within, you know, anywhere between 3 and 6 months once you actually get everything underway, provided you have enough workforce on site, provided that you have everything put in place and contracts signed. Because, you know, these companies don't work for free. They don't produce these things because they're prefab buildings, some of these too, that can be put up and done very quickly.
Just wondering if you have any thoughts on the border closures or opening debate. This was raging a few weeks before this latest lockdown happened, and we've heard all sorts of perspectives, people that have needed to travel overseas for funerals, compassionate reasons, and have been granted an exemption by the federal government. Also, the CEO of Virgin Australia weighing in. Do you think that this lockdown shows that the border should be kept pretty tightly closed, and we should be making the exemptions the rarity rather than what happens sort of on a regular basis until such time as we have this quarantine facility in place?
Well, I think there needs to be a national approach to border closures, not just with overseas but interstate as well. With the federal government abrogating their responsibilities in this area, it's left up to the state. So I don't blame Western Australia, New South Wales, Queensland, anyone for shutting their borders with Victoria, or for Victoria shutting its borders with any other state, which has happened when outbreaks have occurred, because all they're doing is they're upholding their number one priority, which is to protect their citizens, and they should do that. But they shouldn't have to revert to individually locking out individual states for themselves. That should be a federal responsibility, much like the vaccine rollout has been a federal responsibility, and much like having purpose-built quarantine facilities should be a federal responsibility. But they've abrogated all of these to the states, and to me that's wrong. Federal Cabinet has a role here to play. The COVID Cabinet has a role here to play. They need to take this back up to the feds and say, look, these are our ideas. We want you to codify this and get things underway so that we all know where we stand.
The vaccine rollout, how do you think we're doing? We've seen record numbers of people going to get vaccinated throughout this lockdown in Victoria. It's triggered a number of people to go and do it who were obviously hesitant and sitting on the fence. And if I can just find the figures for today, 17,000 doses administered in Victoria in the last 24 hours, so that's still right up there, which is good. How do you think we're tracking as a state in that respect?
Oh, I think we're doing very well, and I think some of the other states are as well too. This is something that, you know, the federal government should have moved faster, should have secured more doses, or at least secured the ability to manufacture mRNA vaccines here in Victoria, where we do have facilities like CSL who can do that. You know, and Victorians are now showing, and this is clearly coming out the numbers, when the vaccines are available, they're ready and willing to turn up and do so. Our only hold up right now appears to be that that, you know, people are frustrated now because they can't book in, you know, the phone lines are overloaded, the logging on online is overloaded. We need to make sure that those things are fixed so that people can book in and get a vaccination, even if that means opening up more centres everywhere, provided we've got enough vaccines to go around. But also, you know, getting a system in place for GPs, for instance, because they're the ones that are also, you know, they work every day in their clinics. They, you know, they vaccinate people for various reasons, various things, you know, penicillin shots and all sorts of different things, tetanus, you name it. They're the professionals in this regard. And so are nurses, you know. We need to instigate that, but I also fully believe that if you are making a booking with your GP to have a vaccination for COVID, then that should be automatically bulk billed, because I'm worried that there may be a situation where you prefer to go to your local GP at your local clinic because that's who you've got a medical history with and you trust them, but that you may have to pay because you're having a consultation, you may have to pay a gap. Now, what we're, you know, the whole line of spruiking of getting people vaccinated is to protect the community themselves and their loved ones. And this is an international medical emergency that we're going through here. So at no point should anyone be, you know, making money off of that. You know, even though, you know, through the best intentions, you know, every time someone wants to present at a GP for a vaccination, well, that should be bulk billed. And that will also encourage those people, because I don't want financial impediment to slow down the progress.
Just wondering if you have any thoughts around the leadership of James Molino, because this has been the first lockdown that he has had to deal with in his leadership style. But I also hear that the Premier's return is likely to be imminent, and he's having a haircut and all that sort of thing, getting ready to come back. So we could see the Premier back on that stage very soon. But is the leadership style of the two characters different, do you think?
Oh, I don't think so. I think they're very different people, clearly, but I think the leadership style has been very consistent, particularly when you look at how Mr. Molino has performed while Mr. Andrews has been off. The approach has not differed. He still comes back to and relies upon the science and the best medical opinions being given to him to make the decisions that they need to make. And he has a very calm demeanour. He doesn't get upset over anything. And I think that's what we've seen with Daniel Andrews as well. So, you know, their approaches to how this is being run have been very similar. And I think that's been a benefit to Victorians as well. Because consistency in the decision-making and consistency in the messaging that's going out there is very important.
Now, when we spoke to you last time, we were looking at the budget that was about to drop, the state budget, and you had a bit of a wish list of things that you wanted to see funded in that budget. Now that the budget has landed and there's been a bit of time to digest it, how did we perform, do you think?
Well, I think as a region we've performed rather well. There's been an awful lot of money spent I was actually, I was thinking this could be, people should look at this as a consolidation budget. They shouldn't be expecting a massive amount of money being spent. And I think that's been true, except that there's been a lot of money spent on essential services, like we've seen, record spending for Warrnambool Base Hospital, for instance, something that I advocated for with the government, which was the relocation of Port Fairy SES. That's happening, and there are a number of different initiatives like that. There has actually been record spending on schools throughout Western Victoria as well, which is fantastic to see. But on a personal note, some other things that I advocated for as well, I'm really happy to see the $165,000 for a virtual fencing trial on Forest Road and Anglesey, something that Jason Shikoki from Surf Coast Wildlife Rescue and I have been advocating for over 4 years now, and pushing for. I'm glad to see that that's actually being funded, and we'll get that underway in the coming months. But for the first time also, the work that rescue groups do with farm animals has been recognised in the budget, with Eagers Mission receiving $60,000 to upgrade some equipment that they desperately need. Victorian Lamb Rescue, who do a whole host of services that they provide of rescuing some of the lambs that are downed in winter who might not necessarily survive. And I actually have farmers come to them and who don't have the time to spend hours upon hours overnight to bring these individuals back to life, So this is important work that these people do, and they're recognised for the first time, as well as a whole host of smaller grants to different wildlife groups right throughout Western Victoria. So, look, we have done rather well in, as I say, what I consider a consolidation budget. But there's always more. I was advocating for, the swimming pool at Bacchus Marsh, and we didn't get that. But I'll be pushing for that to, either come through in the next budget or to actually look for ways to fund that prior to that. So I'm not going to let that one go. There's a whole host of other things like that that I were asked from my local shire councils that, that didn't receive them as a line item in the budget, but I'll continue to push them whilst we're in a non-budget period, if you like.
Do you think that there could have been more funding for the Northern Aquatic Centre than just $8 million? Because the council was asking for 20, so it's less than half. And I just wonder sometimes, if something in Corangamite or South Barwon had wanted $20 million, whether it would have just happened at the drop of a hat, whereas here there's been lobbying for a number of years and it's still only got less than half of what they wanted.
Oh, absolutely. So there definitely should have been more. And you're right. And it seems to be, no matter which colour of government that you have, Liberal or Labor, in power, it always seems to be that the safe seat is the one that misses out. And I'm not saying that they have missed out with $8 million. That's nothing to sneeze at. But as you say, for $20 million, that would have been absolutely fantastic if that was the case. The case always seems to be when we have a Labor state government and a Liberal federal government is that in a safe Labor seat, they always tend to look to the feds to say, well, you need to lift your game and put more money into it. And it just becomes a political football, which is rather sad and annoying, because it's the community in the meantime that misses out. This facility in the northern Geelong area is much needed, and as every day goes past without it being built and providing those services, the need becomes even greater. So all of these delays and arguing over who should be paying for what and what contribution it should be are only detrimental to the community, and that's the as I say, the annoying and saddening aspect at the same time.
Well, Andy, thank you for being on the program, and we'll catch up with you again next month.
No problem, and I hope everyone stays safe.
Thank you. Andy Medic with us there, the Animal Justice Party MP for Western Victoria Region.
The Mitchell's Front Page podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 to 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.